listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go Giants! Let's go Giants! Let's go Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is Torture Cast.
Everybody, and welcome to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. My name is Ben Lee, and here after a couple of long but wonderful weeks of Giants baseball, I am more than happy to be once again rejoined with co-host Chad King. How you doing, Chad?
Pretty good. I just found out that I had a practice game today that I missed. That's great. Anyway, how are you doing, Ben?
I had work that I didn't miss, so I guess I'm doing a little bit better in that respect. Also rejoining us today is Erin, one of our previous guests, and we are more than happy to have her back on the show. How are you doing, Erin?
I'm pretty good. I also didn't miss work, and I ate food I'm allergic to, so today's been pretty awesome.
So if anybody hears any odd noises that sound like something's creeping on us on the background, it's probably just Erin attempting to scratch. I'll think about editing that out. But in all seriousness, we've had a couple of very seesaw-y weeks of Giants baseball to look back on. There's definitely been a lot going on, and there's been a lot of good games and bad games and crying and laughter and tears and, well, and more tears, mostly during that one Rockies game because I had plenty of time for tears. But let's actually start off with some of the latest news, because obviously some news came out just yesterday and today regarding Brian Wilson. Chad, I think you've probably looked into this a little more than I have, so if you want to give us a little quick rundown.
Structural damage in Brian Wilson's elbow.
Never mind. Stop talking about it.
That's pretty much all we need to know. But no, today he kind of came out into the public, and he was a little bit relaxed. But he acknowledged that even before the second, third, and fourth opinions are confirmed, he acknowledges that the likelihood he's going to have Tommy John surgery. So, and this will be his second Tommy John. He had his first when he was 21 years old, when he was pitching for LSU. And there's really just a handful of major leaguers that have had two Tommy Johns, including guys like Jason Isringhausen.
Isringhausen's up to three now, I think.
Three now?
Yeah, Isringhausen's had two. Three. There's a couple of guys who have been through it more than once, though, and I mean, some of them are still having a lot of success. My only worry is I don't know that, unless he makes a serious change, I don't know if Wilson necessarily comes back as a top-level closer after a second Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, we're talking about 2013 at the earliest he's going to be back, and yeah. I'm sure it's not going to be the beginning of the season, because Tommy John usually takes, you know, minimum 12, 13 months, but sometimes up to 18 months to recover from. So there's that concern. He really is excited about pitching for the Giants. There's one thing financially, there could be a good. I'm looking for the silver lining here.
Right.
Basically, when he's owed $8 million this year, which the Giants have to pay, but because of the injury, that actually can cut his salary by 20%. So next year they can pay him $6.4 million, or they can take the risk of offering him non-tender, see if he gets picked up by anybody, which I'm sure he would, and then get him at a lower salary. But regardless, he seems pretty committed to the Giants. He's even talking about, you know, having the surgery, going through his horrible rehab, which he acknowledges is pretty tough. But obviously the guy treats his body like a temple. So I don't think that's going to be an issue. But he's talking about staying with the team, coaching, learning a little bit more, doing whatever he wants.
And I kind of like that approach. Being with him while he's doing his rehab a lot. I know he was talking about that.
You know, I mean, no disrespect to Freddie Sanchez. And I know a lot of guys, I mean, he's a family guy. He's got kids. And he lives in Arizona and all that. So I know if it was me that had to go through Tommy John surgery and I had, you know, two kids to take care of like I do now, I probably would be home with my kids more often during my rehab. But, you know, credit to Brian is that he wants to actually be with the team and supporting them and learning a little bit more, becoming a little bit more of a student of the game, if you will, and even a coach. So it's kind of nice in a sense that maybe come June, July after his surgery, he's going to be actually in the dugout, talking to the players, maybe injecting some energy, doing what he can, even though he can't throw a pitch.
Yeah, and I think that if anybody is likely to, you know, come back from this a lot earlier, you know, somebody who keeps himself in peak physical shape like Wilson, I think it doesn't necessarily mean that you're in a better position to, you know, to rehab any faster, you know, but his body is kind of conditioned to putting in a lot of hard work, and I don't think that it's going to hold him back as much as it might other people. Of course, you hear that about everybody who's trying to rehab back from an injury, so I guess it's hard to say.
The whole thing was really surreal for me because, remember 2 seasons ago, Brian Wilson tears his oblique, and the only comment that he makes is, yeah, I felt something pull, but I was like, screw it, Red Bull time, second inning. And so, like, this is how, in my head, this is how Brian Wilson treats all injuries all the time. It's like, throws back a Red Bull and pushes through. I realize that this is not the kind of injury that this is possible for, but to see Brian Wilson coming publicly and being so calm about the fact that he's going to take 13 months off of playing baseball was just so, like, Twilight Zone Brian Wilson to me.
But, it's like Bizarro Brian Wilson, or like,
exactly. Well, I mean, he's not going to go take a bat to the Gatorade cooler, you know. I mean,
well, I mean, he could still do that. He'd have to do it one armed.
Yeah, he'd have to do it with his left arm.
He might like that, until he might say that it gives him a better angle. I don't know, but I can't help wondering though. I have to ask: do you think that evil Brian Wilson doesn't have a beard?
No, he still does, but it's white.
But it's a white goatee?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now, Andrew Baggerly had a really good column about it today or yesterday. And one of the things that he pointed out is, in all of the people that he's ever interviewed and researched, when their elbow goes, it goes. And they can only throw the ball about 40 to 50 feet. Mm-hmm. Brian Wilson, when he was in Colorado, I mean, he put a lot of wear and tear on his elbow. He acknowledged in his interviews that the stretch run of 2010 and his elbow tenderness last year when he tried to pitch through it probably had a huge contribution to the structural damage that they're finding now.
Right.
But the ligament hadn't popped yet. It was just, you know, it was weakened, essentially. Well, when he was in Colorado, it was when Posey, and I wasn't watching the game, I was listening to the game, and it was during a pitch, suddenly Posey pops up, Rigetti pops up, Bochy pops up. They all recognized something in his delivery. Mm-hmm. I mean, right away, there was something physically awkward about his delivery.
Try to tell that he had turned a spike and twisted his ankle a little bit.
He tried to tell Boch and Rigetti that he just landed wrong and twisted his ankle. And he pitched 10 more pitches, got that excruciating save, which we're, you know, pretty much all accustomed
to. Which all of us kind of thought was normal because it's Brian Wilson.
Yeah, it was normal. I was like, oh, God, I hope his ankle is okay. And then after the game, they said, yeah, he twisted his ankle, whatever. But now that we know, that was absolutely not the ankle. His ankle was – he was lying. He admitted that he was lying to Rigetti and Bochy. But to some extent, I'm sure in the back of their minds, they were like, you know, we would see you limping. You know, we would see favoring that foot, whatever it is. But Andrew Baggerly was making the point that when most guys pop that elbow ligament, they're done. They can only throw the ball 50 feet. He threw 10 more pitches at 90 miles an hour to the glove. So I think that's a testament to his just fortitude. He is that kind of ball player. And yeah, that can get you in trouble. And maybe it even helped cause the injury itself. But I think you have to take some solace in the fact that that attitude really helped in the 2010 season.
Well, and I think it's that attitude that's going to get him back to the team a lot sooner too. Exactly. If anything, you know, we don't there at this time, there's nothing that says for certain that it's Tommy John surgery that I've seen yet. Although I've also haven't been reading the news most of the last half of the day I've been working, but you know, from what I've heard yet, there's nothing that says for sure it's Tommy John. Although that is the assumption everyone, including Wilson, has pretty much made. And he's, you know, he's sort of pointed out I've been through this before. I know what to expect. And I'm, you know, I've got a lot more years on me now. The last one was in 2003. And so Yeah, he's in a better spot to be able to deal with it psychologically as well as physically, I feel like, at this point.
Brian Wilson is the Ubermensch.
That's... Can't really argue there.
All right, so who closes? By committee, who would you chose? Or chose? Chose?
Who would
chose? Who would you choose if you were Bochy? I was trying to say Bochy and choose at the same time.
Who would you cheese if... I gotta go with... as much as I want to say Romo, I feel like I'm not convinced that Romo is ready to drop straight into a closer role at this time. I feel like I could be convinced in as short as a month or less, and it wouldn't take a whole lot. But personally, right now, I would have to go with either Javi Lopez or Santiago Casilla. That's my two guys.
I chose Romo or maybe Casilla. But, I mean... Romo, I definitely see where you're coming from. I do, but like at the end of the day, I feel comfortable when Romo's out there. I feel like he's going to get the job done.
And yeah, I can see that.
I think now with Wilson out of the picture, where there definitely is like where we have a hole that needs to be filled, we are definitely missing a closer. I see Romo stepping up to that challenge.
I could see him winning the job by the end of the year. I feel like, especially knowing the coaching staff, I think it's going to take Bochy a while to kind of go, all right, well, then we're going to go over to Serge in this situation or whatever nickname he calls Romo by. Romy doesn't sound right, so I don't think that's...
Romy's dumb. It's not that.
Yeah, but that said, you know, Romo is right now, he's in a position where he does tend to give up the long ball on occasion, but he's wickedly good when he doesn't. I think that at this point, if anything is holding them back, it's sort of the concern about how he faces lefties and how he deals with his elbow issues, because that does mean that they want to rest it and keep him from getting any major injuries, especially now that we've already seen one elbow go. We don't want anything to start barking at any of our closers.
So well, I want Romo because he's on my fantasy team, so I'll lay that out there. No, but he usually, you know, the last couple seasons is about 40, 45 innings kind of guy. A closer is about an 80 to 90 innings kind of guy. And he has some elbow issues. Mm-hmm. And that's what's really concerning. I mean, if suddenly he's going to double his innings pitched this year, that's going to put a lot of extra wear and tear on his elbow, especially with that slider. And when his elbow gets sore, not snapping, of course, but when it gets sore, that slider, instead of being a little bit more vertical, becomes a little bit more horizontal. It hangs. And that's when, like you were saying earlier, it's susceptible to the home run. So, and especially against lefties. So it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I know they're not going to go with Romo at first. I mean, Boch already came out and said... You know, he's like, look, by committee, basically. Right. So he's going to feel it out. He's going to be like, hey, look, you go into the ninth, you know, and you got two righties or three righties in a row. I mean, you're going to go Casilla. But if you hit a pocket of two or three lefties, you know, or three out of four lefties, you know, maybe you're going to see Lopez. But I think Casilla is going to be the dominant choice to begin with. And they're just going to see how that goes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if Romo ever does get thrown into that role, which he has expressed a desire to be in, not for the closer role, of course, but to face more lefties.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Not just be the Javi Lopez lefty specialist and he's the righty specialist, you know, one or two batters and he's done.
Right.
He wants to complete an inning.
So we're gonna create a new song about Romo called Hey, Leave Me In, Coach.
Leave Me In, Coach. I swear I can pitch.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like Romo has he definitely has the stuff and the ability to do it. At this point, a lot of it is the physical conditioning that I think I'm worried about, because when he's on the mound, I don't tend to worry. It's when he's off the mound and I start thinking about it that I start worrying. It's kind of like one of those relationships where while you're in it, it's fine, and as soon as you get some time away, you're like, I'm not so sure about this whole... Yeah. So, but it's, you know, and Romo is a guy who, as soon as you put him on the mound, I'm like, awesome. He's going to be great. And then it's when you look back and you go, but he's had elbow issues, and you always remember the home runs that get hit off of Romo. It's not even necessarily that home runs get hit off of him, although I do think it happens to him a little bit more frequently. But even if it's not that, it's that it looks like it does. Like, everybody sort of notices when Romo gets a homer off of him, because it's almost always in a close game situation.
Yeah, he's an eighth inning guy, so
right.
It's noticed more.
So, I mean, I guess that's the only thing that, like, it, because he's, he seems prone to it, that I think that might affect perception of him a little bit. I mean, we, you know, the other guys that we've got in the bullpen, though, you know, Mota is an innings eater, and even then he's been getting touched up a little bit. Clay Hensley, Danny Otero, Jeremy Affeldt, none of them are going to be, you know, I don't think any of them are going to be looked at for closer early. I think Otero has the stuff too, but he's, it's going to be a while before he sort of gets settled into that role as well. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think we're really looking at a lot of Casilla, Lopez, and Romo, if anybody, at the moment.
All right, so 9 games in. Do you think this is a bizarro team? You know, little Jerry Seinfeld here. I mean, this is strange. They're near the bottom in ERA, but they're near the top in hitting.
Yeah, I don't get that. It's really funny because it's, we've complained so much about not having offense with this team in the last somewhere between 3+ years. I mean, it's, they're always talking about like, oh, well, if we only had a bat, why didn't Sabian go get a bat? And all of a sudden we've got these bats and it's just like, so how come we can't pitch all of a sudden? I mean, obviously I don't think there's any long reason for worry with that. You know, we've seen a lot of these guys rebound from bad starts and, they've pretty much managed to reassure most of us about how, you know, oh no, I'm going to be fine. That was just a fluke. But I mean, it's just weird to look at and go, wow, we've really gotten touched up. And that one Colorado game did us in a lot. But at the same time, that one Colorado game is the game where we scored, what, 7 runs in one inning?
Yeah, and, 7 runs and 8 runs total.
Yeah, I'm not really familiar with a lineup that doesn't have Pat Burrell in it doing that.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a strange feeling for me. I'm not certain that I'm still in the same universe. I'm concerned that I may have ended up in Albuquerque.
We're only 9 games in, but it is interesting to note that the Giants are 13th in the National League in ERA.
Well, Chad, we're not fulfilling our podcastly duties if we don't freak out over some kind of small sample size. We only talk once a week.
We have to do that.
Yeah.
It's our obligation. We fit that niche of the panicky, you know, set over a very small sample size.
Is Guillermo Mota done?
Exactly.
Is Tim Lincecum the worst pitcher in the National League?
His ERA is 15. 15, I tell you. Out of,
but, like, 3 innings, 2.1.
Exactly.
My God, man.
The Giants, though, you know, they have an ERA of 4.21, which in itself sounds like a Pittsburgh Pirates kind of ERA. But they're near the bottom in the NL, 13th. But if you remove that one game in Colorado, which most of it was the responsibility of Mr. Lincecum, that removes 13 of the 36 earned runs that they've had this season. And that would remove, that would actually lower their ERA down to 3.00 even.
And that's a real number that we can work with.
Exactly. So, you know, and obviously if you take away that loss, I mean, I'm taking away the innings pitched and the earned runs, like that game. Happened. That's basically right. What that is.
And they like would it never was. It's a pity that we can't actually do that.
But you know, they would.
Madison Bumgarner would probably like that.
4, not 4 and 5. But I kind of attribute that to the 3-1-run losses in
Arizona. Arizona. Yeah,
you know, it's one of those things where, again, small sample size, being 4-4. You know, a couple of those swap another way, and suddenly they're 6-2 with a 3.0 ERA. So. You know, I'm not too worried. I think, you know, listening to Cambiar, you get a lot of people panicking. I heard fans calling in to you lynch Bruce Bochy. You know, it's kind of like there are a few games, guys. Come on.
It's definitely his fault.
Yeah.
No.
Well, here's the thing. It's not fun if you just go in and your team starts out winning and then keeps winning and then just wins.
Yeah, no, we'd have to rename ourselves to the, like, predictable cast.
Or the baseball cast. But this is the torture cast. There has to be an element of drama for it really to be Giants baseball. And here's our drama. Because nothing looks better than we start with an ERA of 47 and then, and then win it all. That's so much more fun than, like, oh yeah, they started out and it was a well-rounded team and everyone showed up and did their job and nobody sucked and it was
nobody had a batting average of Angel Pagan.
Yeah, like, there you go.
That doesn't sell tickets.
it's only two starts, and it's on the road, and it's in Arizona and Colorado. But are either of you concerned at all about Lincecum?
I think that after the first start, I would have told you no. After the second start, I'm saying no, but I'm saying it skeptically, and I'm looking at you sideways, possibly through my fingers.
I
can't look.
I'm making a lot of sounds that aren't really words. Kind of like...
That's about the noises that I made every time I saw another earned run crop up on my phone. It was like, It's funny because that was actually the... And it, I guess maybe we can blame it on me. That was the one day of this entire month that I spent in Los Angeles. So I'll take the blame for that. Sorry, guys. Shouldn't have left the city for a Tim Lincecum start. But
that wasn't a great call.
It's true. Well, you know, the other thing that it was really funny because I was visiting my sisters down there and we went to dinner at Brosco's. I think we got there sometime during the fourth inning. And we had our entire dinner there. And of course at Roscoe, sometimes that can take a while. By the time I left, it was only the eighth inning. And I knew that was a bad sign already. You're like, this game is moving really slowly because no one is getting out.
Well, you know, my concern is, I mean, the first start, his velocity was pretty low. So people were commenting on that. But his second start, velocity was back up. Actually, he was throwing 93, 94.
He hasn't done that in a year or two, in fact.
Exactly. So I'm not too worried about his velocity at all. But he was leaving everything up. And yeah, Colorado, thin air, blah, blah. But look at Barry Zito.
Well, I mean that day, everything.
Four-hit shutout.
That day, though, everything was carrying out. And the day that Zito pitched the next day, I mean, Panda hit one that should have just jumped over the fence, and it died on the warning track.
That's true.
Things dying on the warning track in Coors Field, just that's another bizarro thing.
So I'm hoping.
No, bizarro is that Barry Zito stunningly outpitched Lincecum.
Everybody. He outpitched everybody. Complete game four hitter, no walks. Are you kidding me?
Like, okay, maybe is it the. Didn't he say he had his new strategy, right? Where it's all in the hips or. He's in the knees now.
If you watch him, he's definitely got a new delivery. I mean, he's crouching a lot more. He's trying to generate more torque using his legs. And this was really like last night's game was really my first chance to see Zito in action because I didn't get to watch Zito's ridiculously good game. Although I may have to go back and do that. But this was my first chance to really see the new windup. And I can see where he's getting at because he's starting from a lower point. He's trying to generate some more torque. And what's really nice is when you looked at that, to add movement combined with getting his hammer working again, that's really what's I think has helped get him some of that back. He's really, really solid with that curveball in a lot of cases. I mean, he was spotting that thing on a dime, and that was, I think, one of the nicest things to see because we haven't seen that Zito curveball very much since he's been with the Giants for the most part. And every time he has a really good start, you see those pitches come together and start working again.
Okay, so maybe I need to... I'm not officially retracting how much I made fun of him. I'm not apologizing
This is a small sample thing. Entire thing that we joke about is that we're not fickle, and therefore we're not bandwagon fans. But that I think that... I almost feel like because everybody is saying, this is for all the haters, which is ironic, because haters would imply that he's been doing really well this entire time, and we've just been ragging on him, and that is...
No,
that's not quite how I remember it.
He earned every single scornful comment that I've made. However, maybe I shouldn't have laughed at him so much when he announced that he had a new pitching strategy. I think we all thought that this was maybe going to be another one of those pitching's all mental. You just have to visualize the ball.
All right, let's think about this. Lincecum, after two starts, has a 12.91 ERA. Zito has a 1.13. Who's going to finish the season with a lower ERA? Okay. So, I mean, we really need to kind of take a step back and understand that these aberrations are like, because this is the bizarro world are happening all at the front end of the season.
But Chad, this ledge that I'm standing on is so much more comfortable.
That's right.
That's true. That's very true.
Lean up against the wall. Don't get close to the edge of the ledge. Get your 6 inches of heel. It's okay. But, you know, this stuff happens throughout a major league season. But when it happens in the middle or, you know, two-thirds through the season, it doesn't really affect the numbers as much, of course. I mean, clearly. So you get Zito. Has he had two consecutive? No. He hasn't had a complete game shutout with the Giants, but he's had two consecutive quality starts before, three consecutive quality starts before for the Giants.
Yeah, he's had entire months where he looked really good.
Yeah.
And then just the next month, he just fell apart.
Having two or three horrible starts in a row in the middle of the season. And people kind of go, ah, okay, whatever. And then no one talks about it because they get right back into form. But when you head into the beginning of the season and you get Zito going, oh my gosh, it's like his Cy Young season in 2002. It's like, no.
Get carried away.
No.
But I do think that
he has 28 more to go. Come on.
I do think that the upside, though, is, I mean, this at least makes everybody a lot more receptive to watching Zito pitch. And I think that that's what Zito needed in a way. And I, you know, obviously I can make jokes about big head and ego and all that, but you know, when an entire city is starting to kind of turn against you, it kind of wears on you. So, and cause you could hear it when Zito would have a good month or a good 2 months, people would start chanting Barry like they used to when Bonds was in town. And it's, that's gotta, you know, I have to believe that people being willing to get behind Zito because this is the first they're seeing of Zito, just like this is the first that they're seeing of Lincecum. It has to at least make people more prone to saying, well, okay, maybe this will be the year. I'm going to let him roll the string out. We're going to cheer for him. You know, he'll receive what he deserves for pitching like that here in San Francisco. But I think that the difference between him and Lincecum in a big way is Zito gets a lot less rope because Giants fans are great support. You know, they're obviously going to be right behind him. But the big difference is that they're not going to give him as much rope as they're going to give Timmy if something starts going wrong.
Well, for me personally, I'm not worried about Timmy. But those two starts were on the road. His next start is Tuesday night against Roy Halladay. And it's not
Monday
that...
Monday night. It's tomorrow.
Oh, sorry. It is tomorrow night. Halladay obviously should have no effect on Lincecum's performance, but he's at home. Look what happened to Matt Cain. He had a horrible start in Arizona right after he signed that contract. And I already heard people calling the KBR, oh, he has
worst
the money.
Idea ever.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God, he's got a 19 ERA.
So lazy.
And then he comes home and he pitches a complete game, one hitter. So, you know, Cain was fine. There is something to be said about AT&T Park being at home. So I think the biggest key for me is going to be his performance in his first start at home. If he's going to be, you know, one or two runs in seven innings, I'm going to be perfectly happy with that, even if they lose, you know, because it's against Halladay. But, I mean, if he's going to be at home and he gives up 5-6 runs in 5 innings, that's the point where I will start getting concerned because he hasn't really had a stretch this bad ever in his career.
Well, so. Certainly, I mean, we've seen the shortest start of his career now. We've seen some of the highest ERAs that he's touched. Of course, that's because it's at the beginning of the season.
Right.
So that doesn't mean a whole lot. It's all timing. But, you know, I don't think that there's necessarily cause for concern. But part of that, I'm not going to lie, part of that is because in the back of my head, it's the part of me that's rebellious going, yeah, well, all you stupid reporters on the East Coast keep saying that Tim Lincecum is going to break down someday because he's got a funky delivery and we're going to defy all the critics and we're going to be rebels and we're going to have crazy people with crazy deliveries in the NL West like Tim Lincecum and Trevor Bauer and sorry.
Take
sorry,
a breath.
I'm good.
Did it's you okay. get carried away?
Okay. I may have a little bit. I'm going to be all right though.
Okay. Walk it off.
All right. Before I get too far carried away, I mean, we've talked a lot about this. Let's take a look at something else. Specifically, I'd like to look at the number of errors that we've been having because, I mean, it's on the one hand, we've had a couple of really awesome plays. Like Pablo had a really nice one today where he sort of caught the ball over his shoulder in a dive on the grass. But at the same time, like we're not making routine plays. And I think that you can attribute some of that to just the atmosphere of the game in Colorado and just the fact that we've been starting early where I think some guys are pressing, but as people begin to get settled, it's looking better. But the fact remains, you know, 13 errors in 9 games. Nobody's had that many errors, and we can't exactly use the Pirates or the Astros excuse of, oh, hey, it's a young group. I mean, these aren't all young guys that have been having these issues. So I do like to pay a lot of attention to defense, and with our pitching like ours, especially guys like Kane, who tend to rely on command but also on their funky movement and the way that it influences the balls that get hit, that when defense starts struggling, it worries me a little bit. So, I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Well, Bochy talked about it today. He was asked directly if he was disappointed about the defense, and he said, absolutely. I mean, this team is better than this. They are a... You know, they're an above-average defensive team. And, again, it's only been 9 games with 13 errors, and quite frankly, most of them, or a good portion of them, by Pablo. This is uncharacteristic of them. Mm-hmm. And they really need to tighten it down. I mean, it's not just that it can cost games in terms of runs. It extends innings. That's the biggest thing. It extends innings. It affects psyche. It does not help the pitcher in terms of his number of pitches.
Or the defender either.
Yeah, or the defender either. Or other people, you know. I mean, I know when I go out and play ball, you know, we certainly don't have, you know, we usually have 2 to 4 errors per game because, you know, we're, you know, hacks. But when it does happen, you know, especially when there's 2 outs and, you know, it's a tie game or you're protecting a 1-run lead, it happens. It's just natural to go, God damn it, why didn't you pick that up? Why didn't you throw it right? Whatever. And that affects you for the next play. And, you know, suddenly it's hit to you and you're thinking about it. And these guys are major leaguers, but still, it's something they really need to tighten up. It's very uncharacteristic, and I'm not used to seeing Pablo just completely missing these balls, throwing it high at first. I mean, it's strange stuff.
Mm-hmm. Although, it's sloppy.
Yeah. I do feel somewhat comforted by the fact that after a rough couple of first games, Brandon Crawford has really been shining a lot at shortstop defensively. I mean, he is, we all knew it was going to be fun to watch him, but he is a ton of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's been pretty exciting. I do have to
say, he had a few errors in the early games, but he's made up for those errors with some stellar plays.
In a big way. I have to ask, okay, so I think that we're all probably going to have pretty similar answers, maybe identical answers, but let's say that you're making a lineup for the Giants based strictly on defense. Who are you putting in? I know it's. I think that we're probably going to have similar answers. I think that if we're going
Ozzie
to
Smith,
defense, right? Okay. Ozzie Smith and Omar Vizquel will both play shortstop at the same time. That'll give us a lot of coverage there. And wait, I think I'm not doing this right. No,
it sounds right. Keep going.
Okay.
I think that's how baseball works.
And then we're going to load in 3 center fielders to make sure they can all get to the ball.
Well, if there's 3 of them, someone's going to catch it.
There is that. No, I mean,
are we gonna 3 stooge it?
If I'm looking strictly defensive, though, I mean, I'm outfield. I'm looking at Blanco, Pagan, and Shearholz.
Shearholz, yeah.
Infield, I'm thinking. I mean, Pablo really has shown well in defense.
No,
in the past,
he's normally good. He's just got a bad streak going.
So I have to still say Pablo, Crawford. I'd actually go Burris, and then Brandon Belt. And then on the mound, I'm probably looking at Kane, and then Posey behind the plate. Although Sanchez has definitely, he's done well. But I guess maybe I also haven't seen enough of him. In watching him, I think that he's done well defensively working with Zito. It's one of those things where I'm willing to give it to Posey until I see Sanchez work more with the other starters. So at the moment, Posey has to get it kind of because we've seen him do good things, and so we kind of have to give it to him by default. Anybody disagree? Or because
My exact lineup.
I gotta
that's
admit,
actually pretty
it's
much what I'm coming up with, yeah.
So it's kind of, I think that partly it owes to the fact that I don't know how many people would argue with Cabrera or Huff getting defensive time over those guys.
Well, Aubrey Huff, the only thing he's defending right now is his dinner plate. So,
hey-o.
I'm really not super excited about what we're seeing from Huff this season. I'm actually really excited about Pagan. Like, that was a surprise for me. I didn't think I was going to like him as much as I do.
Which is funny, since at the moment I think he's just getting over like a 160, average. But in fairness, I mean, he has been getting on base a lot, and he's using his speed a lot. And that's something that, other than Andrés Torres, we haven't had a lot of in the last couple of years.
We had Darren Ford for, like, a hot minute.
Darren Ford was our, like, our pinch run and go because he couldn't hit. You know, he was definitely a good enough, if not above average fielder. Well, he had plenty of speed, but he could not hit. And so you didn't see as much of him. Torres you would see as a leadoff guy early in games, and Pagan is starting to show a lot more of that, which has been really nice.
Yeah, Blanco had 13 stolen bases in the spring, and right now through 9 games, the Giants only have 3 stolen bases as a team. So, you know, again, it's early. We all know this. They're going to go through their streaks, but it is surprising to see that they haven't been using the running game as much as they did in the spring.
Yeah, that definitely, I think, it almost like spring stats don't really matter that much.
We've never said that before. Strange. I don't know what you were talking about.
I know.
I'll never say that ever.
That's such a weird statement to make, because obviously all of our judgments have to be based on spring statistics.
Clearly.
Gregor Blanco has not stolen a base yet. He also has not had a lot of opportunities, though, so I'm willing to give him
no.
that. He's shown up in 6 games. He started maybe 2. So I'm not willing to say too much about that. I really do hope that Nate Schierholz gets a couple more chances to steal bases. Schierholz really, he has the speed. He doesn't necessarily have the base running experience. You can tell he'll lean, but he just does not. He clearly does not feel comfortable going for a steal. And so I'm hoping that we see a little more of that for him, because his acceleration isn't as fast, but he has a good top speed. Kind of like what I said about Huff in 2010 and really can't say anymore, but we're going to... I'll just bypass that part. I do have to say, though, you know, Schierholz is one guy that I'm really hoping we see more stealing. Pagan, he's just got to get on base more often. I mean, his on base is up to 235 and climbing, and I think that it'll be at a respectable Woo-hoo! Point. We're going up. I think it'll be at a respectable point soon, I hope. But Pagan, I think we need to see him getting on base more, and we need to see him really running more. I mean, we've seen innings where you've got 3 guys at the top of the lineup, and they see 4 pitches total. And you're just like, that needs to not happen. I mean, of course, if we really want reactionary statements, I could point out that Brandon Belt is batting at like a 0.91.
Well, and also every game he's ever played, the Giants have lost.
Right. So Brandon Belt is our albatross now, is that it?
Yeah, apparently.
Right.
Yeah.
He's turning into a whipping boy, which I feel really bad about. I actually have had people at work be like, Belt, what's he done lately? And I was like, nothing, that's the point. They're not giving him anything to do either.
You know, in the Dominican League and in the spring, he was very aggressive. And he's always been knocked for his passivity in hitting. He likes to watch the pitch. He's kind of timid.
There's a lot of element of that as well. But yeah.
There's good things to that, but he's just a passive personality in itself. And so there's a difference of being like a good eye. Obviously, Barry Bonds, you know, I'm not saying, oh, you should be like Barry Bonds.
Right.
But he wasn't overly aggressive in the sense that he wasn't like a Vlad Guerrero or a Panda. He's not swinging that crap outside of the strike zone.
Right.
He's also not letting strikes go by for a called third strike very often. I mean, he really was very plate disciplined despite his power and all that stuff like that. He just made very good high percentage contact with balls in the strike zone. Mm-hmm. Brandon Belt doesn't quite seem to have that. So it's something that I know he's been working on. They talk about it. He's talked about it. And I know that's why Boach has left him out of the lineup. He's even said, I'm going with the hot hand. Hmm. And I think they also know he doesn't have the ego of maybe another player that they would be concerned about where they sit him, that they're going to be worried about that affecting his future performance. So they're taking that opportunity to go ahead and sit him. Even though he's not a veteran, he's not making a lot of money, but at the same time, he's also not going to have the psyche of a person who's going to have a little bit of road rage for not being in the lineup every day.
Well, and I have to point out too, Brandon Belt's, it's true though. The guys have been, the announcers have been pointing at it a little bit during games, but Belt's got a hole in his swing. You know, you throw him middle in, and it is not pretty. And I think that the problem is that people are really exploiting that. They're watching the scouting report, and they're going after it. And Belt's got to be able to make adjustments like a big leaguer, and that's not something that we're seeing out of him yet. But we also can't say for sure that we're seeing him get the chance to make those adjustments. Whether it needs to happen in Triple A or whether it needs to happen in the bigs, you know, he's got to get a chance to face pitchers that aren't pitching to him for practice, but that are actually going to pitch him middle in because that's how they're trying to get him out. And he's not getting to see a lot of that, no matter what level he's seeing it at. So, I mean, I'm a little concerned more about that than I am about the, you know, how he's hitting at the moment. It's not really the stats I'm worried about so much as what we're seeing from him. You know, to kind of like Nate used to have a lot of an issue with stuff that was down in the zone, especially down and away. Or, you know, we used to swing at pitches that would hit him. It was always the running joke. But, you know, a lot of these guys are starting to make adjustments, and they're cleaning up. You know, Panda doesn't swing at stuff that's outside the zone the same way that he did before. If he can think
Panda
he can
would swing it. At anything that moved.
It's true.
When we saw him.
It's true. I mean, Panda
most
actually...
most likely to hit a seagull.
Panda Pablo actually... he actually swung at least three times while we were saying that sentence.
But... swat it flies.
It's nice though because he'll take stuff that especially stuff that's like middle away, he would really just go after it. And a lot of times you went middle away like 2 feet outside the plate, and if he had a late enough break, he'd think he could hit it. Nope, not so much, but he's adjusted. He's gotten better at watching for that and knowing what to do with that pitch. And that's the kind of thing that we need to see from Belt. So I'm hoping he gets a chance to do that. I want to see him smack a couple of middle ins for, you know, and just take them into his pull field and get a couple of hits.
Yeah,
but
I want to see him succeed.
Yeah, and but the thing is, until we see him make that adjustment, which maybe we will any day now, it's hard to say with a guy who's as talented as Belt is. But until we see it, it's hard to be able to say, yes, he absolutely should be starting right now over anybody right now. I want to say yes. It's one of those things where I'm not as sure about it as I should be. Then again, I don't know that Huff is a better option at the moment either.
No.
I wouldn't say he is.
Yeah, when you put it that way. All right, so I want to ask, though, both good and bad, who are you guys' surprises for this season? Like, what have you not seen coming, whether it's good or bad so far? And we probably want to leave the pitching out of this for the most part because very few of them have had many turns on the mound, but... especially from a batting aspect, we see these guys day in and day out. So even though it's only nine games in, who have been your surprises so far?
For me, Angel Pagan. I know he's picked it up the last two games. He's, you know, 4 for his last 8 with a couple of triples. But for the most part, you know, he's a career kind of 265, 270 hitter, which, you know, it's not an all-star kind of guy, but I did think he was going to have a little bit of a better showing, especially during spring, but that just kind of continued into the beginning of the season, and he's still hitting under 200 despite his 4 for his last 8. So that's kind of been my biggest surprise aside from the pitching.
Hmm. I could definitely see Pagan there. I mean, I would say that Pagan has surprised me in both directions. He surprised me during spring with how fast he is, and it's nice to kind of to see that and know that he's a little younger than Torres. But he's also surprised me with just how much he has not made an impact at the plate, especially as a leadoff guy who's supposed to take a lot of pitches. He's not doing a lot of that.
No, he's swinging at crap. I mean, he's not making a lot of contact. He's not walking. So it's not just the batting average. It's the on-base percentage. It's the plate discipline as a whole.
Hmm. What about you, Aaron? What do you think?
Well, okay. See, it's always really strange for me because for whatever reason, there are certain players that will get onto the team and they'll even make it into the starting lineup and they will completely miss my radar. And for me, he was one of them. So... start of the season, we start seeing Pagan, and I'm like, wait, who is this? How is he on our team? And now...
16.
I'm like, I don't...
Joe Montana.
There we go.
That's what I thought. But then I thought he retired, so that was super confusing for me. And now I was like, wait, Bochy's on the field? but yeah, so... I was really excited to see... I'm really excited when we see speed because I think part of the problem that we've had in the past is... I mean, we've complained for the last quite a few years about not having the bats. And then part of the problem was when we had the bats, they couldn't run. So if you weren't going to hit it out of the park, you weren't going to get very far.
What am I going to do with this bat, guys?
Like, even if you look at Barry Bonds is not a fast runner. So Barry Bonds has to knock it out or he's out. And I think that there were a lot of players that played like that. Even Fat Panda can't run. So, Fat Panda can't run. So, I'm really excited to see someone who's fast. I just wish he was better at batting. But we're only 9 games in, so.
No. He's hitting 171. It's only 35 at-bats. I mean, again, that's, 40,
you start nothing. With a cold streak and suddenly everybody says you look ridiculous because that's all your numbers are going to reflect is your cold streak.
Yeah.
So
yeah. No, I'm willing to give him, a good 100 to 150 at bats. In fact, they were interviewing Huff yesterday in the pregame show and they were commenting, they were asking him directly, how do you feel about your cold start? And he said, I've started cold before and I've gotten through it, but my personal opinion is that you need to give a player 100 to 150 at-bats before you really start judging them. So, this is coming from a major leaguer, and I would agree with it as well. 100 at-bats is probably the minimum that you need to use because, you could have one hot week. Could be 30 at-bats. That's a third of the 100 at-bats you're just talking about. Yeah, exactly. So, you need to have a large enough sample size. Within a year, you can't say, I'm going to wait till he gets to 500 at-bats. Of course not. That's going to be most of the season. But
Chad, how can I make rash and insane opinion judgments about baseball players if I have to wait for them to have 100 at-bats?
Even have to wait for them to have one at-bat. Okay.
No.
Nobody did either. They were making rash and impetuous judgments about the Giants before we even got to Arizona.
I don't like his hair color.
Pagan, that's a weird name.
That's not a good one.
That's an oxymoron. What the hell?
Well, then again, Aaron has decided that the best baseball name on the Giants right now is Clay Hensley.
It is. That is a solid baseball name. Clay Hensley. Solid.
All right. I would argue that Brett Pill and Brandon Belt aren't bad baseball names either.
Brandon Belt is not a bad one. Brett Pill...
Pill might be the wrong word to use as a baseball player name. So
Pill's not great. Brandon Belt, solid name.
I don't know. I like Buster Posey.
Buster Posey does make for a good baseball name.
I can't talk about Buster Posey because I love him too much. And I think I've already established this, that there is no... Buster can do no wrong. I named my cat Buster Posey when Posey was going for the rookie hitting streak.
Did your cat get the shingles, by the way?
No, he got worms.
Oh, well, so Buster
but
won't
that
get
was
the
unrelated.
Oh, that.
I don't know how a 25-year-old gets the shingles. That's like what my grandma.
I had shingles.
What?
I had shingles. I'm 23. I've had shingles.
Oh, boy. I guess I'm just ill-informed about the...
I see what you did there.
I'll totally back Buster on the shingles. But I love him too much. So, yeah, Buster Posey's a great baseball name. But I can't be impartial when it comes to him. So I just have to take him out of the equation.
I understand.
All right. So that's out. All right. So... Let's roll on to our new favorite guy, because I feel like with the start that we've had this season, we've got plenty of favorite guys that we can throw out there, whether it's, even if our favorite guy is Wilson, because he said, I'm going to go get that game for bum, even if it turns me into Rob Nen. But let's see. Chad, do you want to start? Who's your favorite guy right now?
Any Giants pitcher that can close.
That is fair.
That's pretty much it. Brian Wilson, no matter how much he has contributed to the heart disease of Giants fans over the last 3 years, he's been good. Even if he loads the bases, he's good. He has a good save percentage. If it wasn't for him, I really, truly don't believe that we would have won the World Series in 2010. Assuming, let's assume he blew his elbow going into the World Series, or going into the playoffs, I should say. Mm-hmm. Would the Giants have won the World Series? I don't think so. So he has been integral to this team. He probably stressed his elbow to get to that point. So any Giants pitcher that can close, if it's Casilla or Romo or Lopez or even Hembree later this year. I mean, I know a lot of fans are actually clamoring for him. I'm not because he's just way too young and unproven. But, I mean, I think a lot of the fans see, oh, he throws 100 miles an hour. He touches 99.
That doesn't make you a closer.
No, it does not make you a closer.
It can make you a good thrower. It doesn't make you a closer.
Exactly. So we need a good closer, not the fastest pitcher that we have. So, well, anyone.
I think that once it gets to the ninth inning, we should just start having who throws faster contests, and the only team that we'll lose to is the Reds, because they have Aroldis Chapman, who's insane. But besides that, hey, I mean, we just put Hembree in for the, like, who throws faster radar gun contest, and we'll go home with a win every time, guys.
Oh, my gosh. All four pitches were 100 miles an hour, but they were all outside of the strike zone. You're out.
It's like that's the rule. If you take a 100 mile an hour pitch, I'm sorry, sir. That's an automatic strike. What?
Yeah, I'll back that.
As for me, you know, I got to make my new favorite guy has got to be Brandon Crawford's evil twin. This mysterious Brandon Crawford, who's actually hitting right around 235 that we were looking for this entire time. You know, Crawford is coming up with a lot of big hits right now. He's timing his hits very well. When he makes mistakes or strikes out, it tends to be at the exact time when we're not doing anything, which is kind of the exact opposite of what everyone else on the team is doing with runners in the scoring position. So I got to go with Brandon Crawford, especially with the defense he's starting to show. It's been really exciting to watch. I mean, when Crawford just reaches out and snags a grounder that's coming way to his left and just whips around and gets to first base in a hurry, and you're just like, how did he – I didn't even – weren't you like – 20 feet to your right a minute ago? When did you get over there? Anyway, so I've been having a lot of fun watching Crawford play. Good defense for me is just as interesting, if not more so, than good batting. And so I'm having a lot of fun watching. And the fact that he's hitting well enough to hold down a 7th or 8th spot in the lineup, I think just makes him a lot more, even better overall as a player to have on the field.
Plus, he's got that hair this season. And
we all know what happens when Giants start growing long hair out.
Long hair or, like, distinctive facial hair of some kind?
That's long hair, just in a different part of the face.
Fair enough. So, obviously, the hair is very important to, like, your mojo as Giants player.
Right, unless you're Javier Lopez.
Well, his lack of hair is important.
I
guess
he,
I don't know,
donated facial hair to the rest of the... That's disgusting. I'm just gonna drop that idea.
That was terrible.
Yeah, nope.
that was really terrible.
Yeah, I know. I'm losing points.
Okay, so. Well, you just invalidated my entire argument, so I'm moving on.
How about you give us a favorite guy instead?
Okay, I'm gonna go with Matt Cain.
All right.
Opening day magic. I always looked for something really exciting for opening day. So obviously last year and the year before, we went into extra innings. 2010 and last year, extra innings opening day for the home opener, where we're relying on Aaron Rowand to come and bail us out. I mean, that was just bizarre, and it happened 2 years in a row.
And it was bizarre because he did. That was always strange.
The whole thing was super weird. So I'm looking for fireworks and excitement when I'm getting a Giants home opener and Matt Cain delivered. And I think that to a certain extent, I mean, nobody has ever discounted Matt Cain. But because he's not Tim Lincecum or Brian Wilson, I think he gets overshadowed as a Giants pitcher.
Just by personality alone, yeah.
Because he's quiet.
Right.
And he's not a huge character. And he doesn't have crazy hair.
But he's like Big Daddy Cain.
I mean, he's Big Daddy. He's got a nickname. And he's a giant human. But, like...
I see what you did there.
Puns. I've been so good. I've made no horrible puns on this podcast. And I was threatening to make, like, 40. So...
I was almost a little disappointed, to be honest.
I get... I get one, and there it is. He's a giant human. But he... I think that Matt Cain has been underappreciated, and it was really, really cool, especially in the wake of Tim Lincecum forgetting how to play baseball. I think it was really, really cool to get to see Matt Cain shine. So I'm a huge Matt Cain fan right now.
He was awesome.
All right. Well, let's turn that unabashed love around and have some unabashed hate. I mean, let's roll through here with some pitchforks and some anger and some more pitchforks, because those look really cool.
Maybe burn some, in hell.
Maybe some torches. Well, let's not go too far.
Okay.
No, on second
we're
thought.
We're only nine games in. We can't start that high up. Like, where do we go in August?
Oh, no, we can. We can, but
we have to call for our own players' heads at this time. Yeah. And then we start calling for the other players later in the season.
All right, well... The Dodgers are 9-1.
Never mind. We can always call for the Dodgers' heads. I take it back.
Let's call for the Dodgers.
That's just not good. That's just not good. But one of the main reasons they are 9-1 is Matt Kemp. That dude, coming off his near MVP season, he's hitting .487, six bombs, and 16 RBI already. I mean, the guy is just on fire. So, you know, I can't hate him for his baseball prowess, but I can hate him no matter what.
But, you know, two more reasons that the Dodgers are 9-1, just right off the bat. One reason is Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah.
And the other reason is that they've played the Padres how many times now?
Six times.
Yeah, that's going to do a lot for your win percentage.
Yeah, it will.
God, there's a guy that I work with who is from L.A., and he barely pays attention to baseball. But he somehow becomes very, very aware when the Dodgers are winning. And he's so smug. And Matt Kemp is making it possible for me to have to look at that smug face. And I just want to crush it. Like, although in true Dodgers fashion, he did look up. If we're looking at MLB.com. Ben and I are watching the game on our lunch break. And our coworker looks up. It says mid-fifth at the Dodgers game. And he goes, oh, looks like the Dodgers just won. And we're like, you know the game's not over for like another 3.5 innings, right?
Sort of like a long pause. Oh, it said end fifth. I thought it said end.
End.
I kind of pointed out that, you know, for Dodgers fans, the fifth inning is kind of the end anyway. So, I mean, so you're all gone by the seventh. All right. Well, personally, I'm actually going to go ahead and I think that I'm going to be in agreement with many fans that are not Chad in saying that I'm going to hate on James McDonald for being the pitcher that got the one hit that broke up Kane's no-hitter because the only guy who got a hit that entire game was the pitcher. And I mean, it's James McDonald, who is not the worst hitting pitcher of all time, but he's also not all that great as hitting pitchers go. He's not Micah Owings, you know. It's just kind of like, one hit, and it was James McDonald. There's a lot of Giants fans that are probably really upset with James McDonald right now.
Yeah, but it was clean. Oh my gosh, it was clean. So
that's one of those hits that you look back at as a pitcher and go, yeah, that was all me. You could have hung clothes on that one.
No, he did. Matt Cain did. I mean, he was behind 2-1, and he just, you know, pumped it right down the middle. He went with it, opposite field, solid line drive, one hopper through the left side. So what are you going
to
do?
Put his jersey on it as it went by to hang it and let it dry?
Yep.
Yeah, no, you have to, I guess, respect when a pitcher gets a clean hit like that, especially. I'm sure that makes him the hero in the clubhouse, but it was like, James McDonald, I mean, come on.
Well, it's crazy to think that that's Matt Cain's third career one-hitter. I mean, he's come so close three times. So, yeah, he's with the Giants for the next 6-7 years. So that just means it's going to happen at least a couple of times, right?
I would actually venture that with our luck, it's going to be Todd Wellemeyer is going to come back to the team at some point and pitch the next no-hitter for us. We're gonna be like,
Kevin Correa is going to be traded back in 2 years.
Right, we're gonna suddenly get an influx of like Ricky Nolasco, who's suddenly gonna remember how to pitch again, and actually that wouldn't be so bad. One of my first Giants games I ever saw at AT&T Park was Ricky Nolasco slicing and dicing us. So that's always kind of stuck in my head. Every time I see the word Ricky Nolasco, it doesn't matter what his ERA says right now, I just kind of go.
Yeah, your sphincter clenches. I understand.
Now we're just getting graphic.
What?
Thanks for that.
Speaking of getting graphic, Aaron, who do you want to graphically hate on?
Oh, God. Okay. So I'm going to take it in a slightly different direction. And I'm going to hold Aubrey Huff's personal trainer accountable. Because clearly that guy is not paying attention to what is going on. Has anyone seen how fat Aubrey Huff has gotten?
Yeah, it's his fitness has like, clearly gone in a different direction. That's the whole point.
That's not muscle, bro. You've just gotten fat. You've eaten everything that has come across your path. Like, he was looking a little chunkers at the end of last season, but like, come on. End of 2010 season, he was like ripping his shirt off and we're like, oh, goodness, those are abs. That's where we're keeping the abs at. Anybody needs abs, Huff's got some extras. Like, that, it was insane.
I'm going to start calling Aubrey Huff the former ab closet now.
He was the ab closet. Like, it was insane. And now, Aubrey Huff clearly ate whoever tried to pick the lock on the ab.
Nice.
It's just, it's out of control. And Aubrey Huff's personal trainer, I am begging you, get it together. Like,
all right.
I mean, if there is a city that you can try to do Pilates in, it's got to be San Francisco. I mean, yeah. You know,
there's probably 20,000 Pilates trainers.
I use at my old apartment. All three of my former roommates are all trying to get certified in Pilates. And clearly, there's a market for it in San Francisco.
Clearly,
I stand at my window, and my window is 75% obscured by a wall, I can still see three yoga studios.
Nice.
So...
That's... You do live in San Francisco.
I live in the Outer Sunset District of San Francisco. This isn't even that impressive. Like, Aubrey Huff has no excuse.
I hate the phrase "no excuse" because there's always an excuse. It just doesn't mean there's a good one.
Oh, it tasted good. That's not acceptable. I do not accept this as an excuse.
Oh boy. So now on that note, that's really the wrong note to try and segue into our win it all segment. I don't really know how to follow that up, but Chad, there's got to be something, right?
You know, if we continue hitting... No, I can't match what she just had.
You're right.
No, I just give up. But if we are going to win it this year, if we hit like we are now, pitching's going to take care of itself. It doesn't even have to be at 2010-2011 standards. If it's even just marginally, you know, better than it is now, we're going to be fine if we hit like this. Now, do I think that's going to happen? No. But if it does, we're going to be just fine.
All right, I can get behind that. I mean, for me, I got to say that the pitching is rebounding, and rebounding is a really awkward term to use because they all had, like, one bad start, except for Zito. And so it's kind of like, all right, well, that didn't go well, but it's been 1 week.
Yeah,
so, 1 week. But, you know, clearly we've had some standout performances already from Kane and from Bumgarner and from Zito, and I think that that's only going to get better. I think that we can't expect them to have a ridiculous start every time out, but I think that we can expect we're going to get some real quality innings from all of them. And if we're up and down the rotation, if guys are contributing, whether that's all at once or if it's just firing on and off, the fact that it's a different guy every night and that we don't have one solid only star in the rotation, I think that's going to carry us a real long way because that kind of team philosophy and team psychology is what took us a long way in 2010. I feel like it's going to do it this year too.
I agree with what both of you are saying. And the other reason that I think that we are going to win it all is because we've had a really rocky start and the Giants have proved time and time again, they play better when they have something to prove. And they started last season as World Series champions and they did not play like champions and they were sloppy. This year, we've already seen some injuries, but for the most part, we've got a pretty solid block of guys out there who now they're not defending a title, but already 2 weeks in, people are starting to be skeptical, and now they have something to prove.
Yeah, so, this team does play well with a chip on its shoulder.
Yeah, they play really well with a chip on their shoulder, and I mean, if Timmy's... I don't even know what... I don't even know what to call what Timmy's been doing. So, I don't even know.
Oops.
But, yeah. If the tiny snafu in our pitching thus far is any indicator, we're going to have a big chip on our shoulder. And I think that that's going to give him something to fight back to.
All right. Well, I got to agree with all of those things. I think with all of them, every single thing that we've said today, I agree with every last one of it. I think that it's definitely going to be an exciting season. I'm just really glad that baseball is back. I'm excited to say I am going to be at the next two games, Monday and Tuesday. So,
both games.
Yeah. Wow. Yes. Going to be watching Lincecum and Bumgarner. I'm not certain I'm going to be making Wednesday. Doesn't look like it, but for anybody out there who's listening, who hears this in time, if you are going to be at the Monday or Tuesday games, feel free to get at us on Twitter. We are at TortureCast. Let us know where you're going to be. If we get a chance, we'd love to, say hi and get your feel on what we're doing with the team this year. But that said, if you want to find us on Twitter, we are at TortureCast. You can also catch us on email. We are mail@torturecast.com. Look us up on Facebook. We're TortureCast because duh. And, if you want to get at us, any of us individually, you can always find Chad at ChadK21. You can find me at Fried Duck. You can find our absent Willie at Willie Dills. And you can find Aaron at Aaron, only it's spelled E-X-R-I-N, but the X is silent.
Clearly logical.
It makes it made perfect sense when I was 15. And
I really can't argue with that. I had a lot of bad ideas when I was 15 that just haven't gone away.
Yeah, I had pink hair. So I don't have pink hair anymore, but the X is stuck.
as choices go, you probably picked the right one to keep around, so I can't really argue.
Fair enough.
All right, and on that note, we're going to go ahead and let's move on to a decision we won't regret, and that's to enjoy a season of Giants baseball coming up. I'm stoked to watch it. Hopefully so are you guys. Let us know what you're thinking, even if it's a gross overreaction or if it's trying to tell everybody else to stay calm. Shoot us your letters.
Above 500!
We're never going to do it! Shoot us your letters at TortureCast, at mail@torturecast.com. Leave us a comment on our webpage at torturecast.com, and we'll see you next time. Boom!
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.